Good morning.
There you go. Thank you. I don't. The pink football. How do we do this year in a Turkey Bowl? The ladies won. What year? The third? Did you say third year in a row? I knew it would have been two. I didn't know about three in a row. Very good. The guys, did they have a team or did we're not talking about that? We lost. We lost quickly or are we? No. Do you have a battle? They tried. There you go. So, but the guys could have beaten the girls. I mean, do we ever have that game, or we don't even talk about that? Girls are still in. Okay. we normally do something with welcoming the visitors. I have some visitors here I'd like to say hi to. They're from Oakland Christian. We have Emily, Kelsey, Katie, and Ivy. Ivy's an international student. And so please welcome them. Any other visitors we have today? No, oh, yeah, we should give them a... Did I embarrass you guys enough that... Yes, I understand. Okay. It's good to be back. It's been a few months. I've been kind of like taking a sabbatical and just going to church on Sundays. It's a little different. So I haven't been speaking at churches. But I want to go into a message today, a little bit of a different perspective on things. I'll get into this in a moment. I'll explain what I'm talking about there, but I have been in this area now. It's my 21st year in this area. Involved with this church like 15 years or something it has to have been by now. I remember when, you know, some of the doctors were in middle school. It kind of feels funny. I saw Liz's parents just this last week, and I remember in seventh grade, and now it's doctor time. Before I came to this area, I was in Cadillac, Michigan. And those who know me know that I enjoy a lot of sports, involved with sports. I've coached 37 varsity teams at Oakland Christian. Back when I was young, I played a lot of sports to the extent that in my freshman year in college, I coached a volleyball team, but then played nine other sports on teams. Not different, all the sports, but different teams I was on in my freshman. So I was 10 different teams my freshman year. So I was always around sports. So normally wherever I go, I like to be around the sports area. When I moved up to Cadillac, talked to a couple of kids in the youth group, went to a couple of their games, met this one guy named Brandon. And Brandon was a phenomenal athlete. He was one that, I remember first seeing him in baseball, and they would normally pitch around him. They would just walk him all the time, and then he'd just steal the bases. And when he finally get to third, he would just start walking home to get in a pickle. And I never saw him get out in a pickle. He would always, and then he'd just walk across home plate. And it was just funny watching this kid. He was just such a phenomenal athlete. In football, basketball, baseball, he dominated. And the kids are talking about him. I'm like, who is this kid? And it's Brandon. And I'm like, Brandon, he's amazing. He's eighth grade. I'm like, serious? The kid's already built at this, you know, a young age, and phenomenal, to the extent that the kids who were talking to me were high school kids, because the high school kids respected this eighth grader. They're like in awe of him. And I remember starting off saying, you know, this kid needs to get saved. And they're like, no, not Brandon, he won't. And so I just started going to the games, introduced myself to Brandon one time, started encouraging him, talking to him, and inviting things. We had something on Friday nights where I would open up the gym from 6 until midnight at the church. And it was called fifth quarter, so after whatever game they had, they'd come over, have a place to hang out. Different things were going on. You'd have people play guitars. You'd have people off the side trading baseball cards or football, you know, those kinds of things. But the gym was always going on with some kind of sport, and typically basketball. And 1 week he came. And we'd always have a break time where I would just give a little devotional. And this week I gave devotional. pulled him aside afterwards, and I said, "Brandon, I have been praying for you for 2 years." He said, "What?" I said, "I've just been praying for you for 2 years." He said, "Well, why?" And I said, "Can I take 5 minutes and tell you why? Share with you what I've been praying?" He said, "Absolutely." And so we sat down in my office. Well, Jim's going all crazy and stuff. And I shared Jesus Christ with him. And he looked at me and he said, "Why wouldn't somebody accept that?" He said, "Will you wait here for me for a moment?" Sure. He goes back in the gym, and the Cadillac High School is a Class B school, so it's a decent sized school. Okay, most of you are on Class A schools, I understand that, but it's a good sized school. He goes to the gym, calls over 4 of his buddies, says, "You need to hear this." Takes him into my office. I now have the starting 5 from Cadillac High School's basketball team in my office. He said, listen to this. I just shared the gospel again. All 5 prayed to accept Christ right there. And then I got a chance to disciple them for the next 2 years and continue on talking with them and going through things. And it was so cool. But there was a situation, and I think in the church, we can have a problem. Some people call it little wild times. We go through difficult times. We'll have something where it's like, when we're weak, that's when we need Jesus. Or people who are weak, now they need Jesus. And it makes sense, because it reminds us that he's there for us, that this time will too pass, this little while time, but it gives us confidence that Jesus is there. But what I want to really emphasize today is that it's not just the weak who need Jesus, that everybody needs Jesus. I've told you one of the things that I really enjoy about being involved with this church. And, you know, back, whatever it was, 15 years ago, I got started with the church because a friend had an emotional breakdown. He had been here only a couple months and left and moved up north. And the church had given him a sabbatical and just some time to regroup. And I had been helping him, like mentoring him, because I had worked in the Chinese church, you know, back in 81 and 82, a couple years ago. And so I'd been helping him, and so I was a reference for him. So I felt responsible. So I got involved with this church to help out a friend who was hurting. And it was a 6-week agreement. And I fell in love with this church. And it was at 5 points, and then they did a lot of stuff at the school, and then watched you guys build this and everything. I fell in love. And one of the things I did was, I love it when people think. Stereotype time. Not that you never get this in your life, right? But the stereotype is that you are intelligent. Fair? Fair, isn't it? Either you study harder or you just give all the credit to your parents. You're not doing that, are you? No one's giving credit to their parents, right? But, and I love when it comes to Christianity that we think, that we evaluate, that we reason, that it's logical. You have it so much together, but I really believe that if you don't have Jesus Christ, you don't. No matter how gifted someone is, without Jesus Christ, they don't have it all together. I'm going to go into a story today. Let's go to this next slide. And geographically, I've been here. The chairs weren't there. This is Caesarea. This is Israel. Someone standing down here, speaking at this voice, could be heard up here without the mic. Mediterranean Sea, the Great Sea's behind. It seats about 2,000. This is a scene that you're going to have when Paul is in front of Agrippa. And that Paul would have come up here, no chairs there, and they would have all been piled through here. Next slide gives another picture of this theater. And again, you have the Mediterranean behind you. If you go to the next slide, you're going to see what would be just over here to the north. And it is, so the theater's over here. The king built his own harbor, so that he could, when he comes from Italy, go right into his palace. The capital was there, and he could just go right in and never be exposed to the people. And so his ship would just come right on in. It had a moat around it. Later, in like the teens AD, they let the moat dry up, and they would just let lions run it. And so that was their, like, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen a sign, beware of lion. I haven't, but I guess that's what you'd have instead of beware of dog. Next slide, please. And again, you're going to have, what's the reverse negative? Come into harbor. Yeah, this is this is correct. This is the palace area, and then it's going to be a theater. I need to share all of that as I go into, you can give me the passage we're going to go to now. In Acts 25, you're going to have a situation here where Festus is the mayor and the governor, and he has Paul as a prisoner. And Paul's been talking with him, and King Agrippa, this is King Agrippa II, comes to Israel. And he says, oh, you need to go before him. Paul's like, okay, that's fine. And so he's going to meet before him. And so in Acts 25:23 it says, and on the morrow when Agrippa was come, Bernice, which is Agrippa's sister, you know, let me go back. This is, no, I want the other slide still. I'm sorry. This is King Agrippa. Nope, but you were good where you were at. There. This is King Agrippa II. His sister's Bernice. King Agrippa's great-grandfather was Herod the Great. We know of Herod the Great because when Jesus was born, he tried to have all the little boys killed. And then this Agrippa's father would have been King Agrippa I. He's the one who beheaded James in Acts 12. And he also threw Peter in prison. And so that's his, like, family heritage kind of thing. And so on the morrow, when Agrippa was come, and Bernice, again his sister, with great pomp, and was entered into the place of hearing with the chief captains and principal men of the city, at Festus' commandment, Paul was brought forth. I love being at Caesarea. It's one of my favorite places to be at because it was really touching for me to watch the scene where here we are, you know, instead of me being elevated over you, it's the reverse. You'd be seated up like that, the theater seating. Paul's down here by himself. And in comes Agrippa. And because when you're sitting there, you're up so high, you can see the ships, you can see the Mediterranean, you can see over at the palace. And as he's brought in, as it says, with great pomp, they're bringing him in, very possibly carrying him in. And there was an area right in the middle of the theater that was like, if you had for special handicap seating, it was blocked off. That was for the king. And they're bringing him in. And so as he comes in and brought there, I really believe everybody looked at him like, oh, I wish I was the king. Oh, it'd be so cool to be the king. Look at the king. And all he has, you see his palace? You see his ships? He can go wherever he wants. He's got total freedom. He's got the money to do whatever he wants. We're struggling to eat, and he's got whatever food he wants. He's got women. He's got power. He's got prestige. And everybody's looking at him like, oh. And maybe we get caught doing this sometimes with superstars. I wish I was such superstar. Watch this and comes in, and then Paul is there. Let's go to the next verse, please. Acts 25:24. And Festus said, King Agrippa, and all the men who are here present with us, you see this man, about whom all the multitude of the Jews have dealt with me, both at Jerusalem and here also, crying that he ought not to live any longer. You have Agrippa, who has everything. You have Paul, who has nothing, to the very point where they're saying he's not worthy to live. He should die. People are telling me I should kill him. Agrippa, what do you think? And so now is Paul's time to say why he shouldn't be killed. Possibly plead for his life. Agrippa can free him like that. He starts off with his testimony, his story. His story is one that he was a Pharisee who had those items of position and power and finances, who was well respected. He was one who didn't believe Jesus was Messiah and even killed Stephen. You can read about that in Acts chapter 7. And he was one who finally gets to a point where he's going to Damascus where he wants to persecute more Christians. This, he's just telling a story. And he says, and then I met Jesus. And a light came down and hit me. And at that point, I gave my life to Jesus. I don't know what your story is, but you have a story. And if you're one who's a follower of Jesus Christ, what is your story? That's what you share. What was it that, how did you come to know who Jesus is? What was it before? Realize, for me, mine was age 7. It's not like I was on drugs and I was, you know, I did all these things and I had, you know, all these different jobs. And I was 7. I stole cookies from the cookie jar. But I was lost and I needed Jesus Christ. And that's what my story is, and my story continues what I do with it after that. He just shares his story. And then in the next slide, with Acts 26, 22, and 23, he then goes in to share the gospel. He says, I have therefore obtained help of God. I continue unto this day, witnessing both to small and great, saying, none of the things and those which the prophets and Moses did say should come, that Christ should suffer, that he should be the first that should rise from the dead, and should shew light unto the people and to the Gentiles. This is a time where Paul is allowed to ask for his life to be spared. And instead he shares Jesus Christ. He says, you know, if we look at the prophets, it says that the Christ, Messiah, is going to suffer. That was a mindset that they didn't have. They expected him just to come as king and take care of everything. Festus at this point says that Paul is crazy. He stops and says, you're crazy. But he continues and he says in the next slide, but King Agrippa, believest thou the prophets? I know thou believest. He says, Agrippa, you know what the prophets say. I know you understand it. Then Agrippa said to Paul, almost thou persuadest me to be a Christian. This is the King James Version. The New International Version says, what, in such a short time you thought you'd become a Christian? You almost convinced me to be a Christian, just like that. And then what I really want to focus on is Paul's response in verse 29. And Paul said, I would to God that not only you, or all thou, but also all that hear me this day were both almost and altogether such as I am, except these bonds. He's talking about this, we're both almost, both you and everybody here. And he totally turns the tables on him. When everybody's looking at the king saying, oh, I wish I was a king. Paul, the guy who comes on to the stage with chains, bound, prisoner, not worthy of living, having nothing, looks at the person having everything and says, kind of, I feel sorry for you and everybody here. I wish you guys had it as good as I do. I wish you had what I have. And then I love it because I think he throws in a little bit of sarcasm of humor saying, except for, you know, these chains. Some of these bonds. I mean, you know, you might want to do away with those. The Message Bible, which the paraphrase says, except for this chain jewelry. I wish you could have what I have. Except for these chains. Wow. What a perspective. Can we go to the next slide, please? Oh, at this point, by the way, at that point, Agrippa said, you know what, he can go free. And Festus said, but he doesn't want to go free he's demanded that he get to meet with Caesar. He goes, well, we can set him free. No, he doesn't want to. He wants to meet with Caesar. So he stayed in prison so he could still share the gospel. Without Jesus, we have nothing. My little formula for that. I'm sure it's like some advanced calculus. You haven't had it yet. With Jesus, we have everything. I'm using it as an infinity sign. Is that okay? Am I allowed to do that? Right? I'm not allowed to, am I? I'm allowed to do whatever I want here. You know that. If Revenge, the TV show, if everybody's seen it, they're really going a lot with the infinity sign now, right? I would say you got to listen to Daddy now, but I'm probably old enough to listen to Grandpa's story now, right? When I was your age, we had this dumb line. There's a couple things we had. One you've probably seen from Christmas Story, I Double Dog Dare You. And that's one you probably use sometimes. You're familiar with that one, right? If we were ever going to say something like, I'm twice as good at you at something, and you're like, oh, I'm 10 times better, the ultimate comeback, and you couldn't immediately go to it, was, I'm infinity times better. And it was like, that was the end all. I'm infinity times better. And then people came up with, I'm infinity plus one better. And like, you can't do that. There's nothing past infinity. Oh, yes, there is. I'm infinity plus one. And it just, you're breaking the rules. But it really was that mindset that infinity was everything. And Paul looked around, and he had very simple math. If you have Jesus, you have everything. If you don't have Jesus, you don't have anything. When you're entering Christmas season, where it's a time, we talk about the reason for the season, reevaluate your life a little bit with this. If you have Jesus, you realize you have, go to the next slide, please. There are those of us who have Jesus. If you don't have Jesus, I encourage you to consider, who is Jesus Christ? What does he offer? And ask for somebody to show you from the Bible. The second one, just because we have Jesus doesn't mean we always realize we have Jesus. Stop and go like, I have Jesus. I have eternal life. I have confidence. I have purpose in life. I have God who will always be with me. I have God who will not let me go through anything that I can't handle or that he can't handle for me. And then live like we have Jesus. I look back at the Israelites going through the wanderings. And I really do give them a hard time. It's like, seriously, if I saw the Red Sea open up and you walk across dry land, and I've heard people say, well, it must not have been very deep, but it could open up, and it's like, it's dry land. And realize it's deep enough that when it closes, the soldiers, the enemy, drown. So what's the miracle? That this great thing opened up, or that people drowned in a teaspoon of water. I mean, you know, a whole army. I mean, just seriously, okay? You can see this great miracle go through, and then manna come from heaven, and you have to Friday night get twice as much because you're not going to gather on Saturday, and it will stay fresh for you. But if you gather twice as much on any other day, it spoils. Like, how does it know to do that? Why is that God thing? And then you guys want meat? Well, here's quail. They're just going to fly down to you. You don't have to go catch them. You want water? Oh, here's a rock. Rocks are known to be full of water. And then what are they known for? Always complaining. And I give them a difficult time until I look at my own life. And it's like, wow, I'm so blessed. Do I realize how blessed I am? Why do I complain? Why do I whine? I want to go to one more story. And can you have the next picture for me, please? Thank you. Can you guys see that well enough to know what that is? And even if you do know what it is, you probably won't answer anyhow because that's how you treat me. left with me or at me or anything, either one. You have a Philippian jailer. I'm going back to Acts 16. You have these guys named Paul and Silas who have been going through and they've been preaching. And they've had this one demon-possessed girl behind them, mocking them. And finally, he turns around and casts the demon out of her. And now she can't make money for her owners, actually. And they get mad, gets reported, and the next slide gives us the passage. And the multitude rose up together against them, and the magistrates rent off their clothes and command to beat them. And when they had laid many stripes upon them, they cast them into prison, charged the jailer to keep them safely. Who, having received such a charge, thrust them into the inner prison and made their feet fast in the stocks. And at midnight, Paul and Silas prayed and sang praises unto God, and the prisoners heard them. This is an amazing situation. Because here you have Paul and Silas, first of all, and they laid many stripes upon them. And they're whipped. They're beaten. Unjustly. Illegally. And they were beaten. I know we have some of you, a younger crowd here, and it's an older movie, The Passion for Christ by Mel Gibson. Anybody see that? A couple people? Yeah. There's the scene where Jesus is being got 39 lashes. They're beating him. I don't know if you remember that, but that's so embedded in my mind. It's like, wow, what Jesus went through. Paul was beaten. And then he's thrown in prison. And this is in Acts 16. Realize, Paul doesn't know there's an Acts 17. We do looking back. He never knows that it's his last day. They're wanting to kill him. And at midnight. At midnight, we would be complaining or sleeping. And here they are, praying and singing praises. I think too often we have, I don't even realize what we do. We go through a difficult time, we complain about it. And I've never seen this situation happen yet. I've never had it, okay? Where a person comes up to someone and says, man, your life is horrible. I can't believe all the junk you're going through, and you're miserable to be around, and man, everybody tries to avoid you because it's just, I'm sorry to pick on this, but it's just, you have a horrible life. What can I do to have that kind of horrible life? So I can complain and be miserable, and you say, well, I have Jesus Christ. I'm like, oh, I need that Jesus. We know that doesn't happen. What typically happens is someone watches you. I'm like, man, you've been going through some tough times. Yet you keep plugging along. You go through some tough times, but you're encouraging other people. You're going through tough times, but you seem happy. How is that? And you say, I know God's in control. Jesus in my life. Like, I don't get it. I want to know more. And we share Jesus. This story goes on. I don't have the passage here on screen, but the passage goes on. An earthquake came about, and everyone was allowed, I mean, just everything broke loose, and they were all able to leave. And the jailer, who there was a double punishment if a prisoner got loose, especially if one in the center, the one that they, you know, Paul and Silas, if they get loose, death, and there was something worse than death. Oh, yeah, I could be worse than death. The family name. Typically, that Chinese mindset has a better understanding of family name than an American mindset. And I know I'm mainly talking to Americans here. But if you were to talk to your parents, or definitely your grandparents would probably, like, you do this for family name. And that, like, ends the conversation. Right? the dishonoring of family name for this prisoner, this guard, he comes in, he's ready to kill himself. And Paul says, don't. We're all here. All these other prisoners stayed. And I believe they accepted Christ. I can't be dogmatic about it. The mindset would be, you're able to leave prison? Prison, not in prison. Tough decision here. But they don't leave. They want to hear more. And they've watched Paul and Silas. And they're like, you guys are weird. How can you praise God in this situation? Like, well, let me tell you what Jesus did for me. And the guard, the jailer, has been listening to the point that when he finally comes and he hears that, he says, what must I do to be saved? He wants to hear it. I want what you have. The next slide, please. Simple message. Without Jesus, we have nothing. With Jesus, we have everything. Next slide, for those of you who like my formula, my simplicity. You do know that my silly things sometimes stick in your mind even though you don't want them to. It's so true. And I have Jesus. Next slide, we're going to close off with this one. I have Jesus. I don't deserve to have him. I don't deserve to be saved. It's not that I'm such a good person. I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but one of the phrases we sung earlier, I'm not a big fan of. I like the tune, My God is Stronger, My God is Greater. I like the tune of it, and you should continue singing it. You gotta be careful with that, okay? And I don't, are you allowed to say you don't agree with like praise songs? I mean, is that like wrong or something? I think we need to take time to really say, God, you are the greatest. And that conversation we should be with God, my fear with a song, and you can correct me on this later, but it's like, my God can beat up your God. If I went to class, that's not a good witness to music. It's like, you know, my God can beat your God up. My God's bigger, you know. When I was a kid, we used to say, like, my dad can beat your dad up. You guys ever use that line? We used to. My dad can beat your dad up. Your dad's the one thing my mom. I mean, we just, you know, it's a tragedy, but I don't know if that's the song. I'd rather the song be me realizing to God that you are the greatest. I've looked around. You've allowed me to think. You've given me a strong mind. And I realize you are the Almighty God. It's you I choose to follow. Realize that He is God. Begin to live like it. Look through life. For me, it's like, stop your whining, stop your pouting. Focus on how blessed you are. Realizing that I have Jesus. That's right. Father, we definitely thank you for your love. We realize it's not that we were awesome and you chose to love us. But yet while we were sinners, that's when you sent your son Jesus to die for us. I pray that through this next couple of weeks, these upcoming weeks, that we would take time to realize